The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey guys, welcome to a bonus episode of Happy, Sad, Confused. Doesn't even the word bonus make it sound that much more exciting? The reason this is a bonus episode is every Monday we've been publishing a new podcast, and this one kind of fell into my lap a couple days ago. I found out Lee Pace was going to be in town. For those of you that don't know, and if you're listening to this, you probably do, Lee is a great actor who has earned a lot of acclaim on some big television series, probably most notably Pushing Daisies. The film The Fall has earned him a following. He was in Lincoln, he's in Guardians of the Galaxy, and he is now, I should say, he's also in the Hobbit films. He is now starring in a new AMC show. I found out he was promoting it. I caught the pilot. It's really cool. It's called Halt and Catch Fire. It inherits that Mad Men Sunday night time slot for AMC starting this Sunday. It's well worth checking out. It's a really cool drama set in the early 80s during the PC wars. And Lee's awesome in it. He's the leading guy in it. And he's an interesting character. I had never really spoken to Lee at any length. I mean, once or twice maybe on a carpet. But when I found that he was available, I kind of jumped at the chance because he's a fascinating actor and someone that doesn't do a lot of press. There's kind of an air of mystery about him. And you can tell from this interview, I wouldn't say he's wary, but he's definitely soft-spoken. And I'm proud to say I think we got him out of his shell a little bit. And he reveals what makes him tick to a degree. And he comes across great. He's awesome. I'm a bigger fan than ever. And this, like I said, the series seems like it's going to be a cool one. I've seen the first episode, and the first season is 10 episodes long, and hopefully will continue much, much longer, because more Lee Pace is a good, good thing. Before we play the podcast, I want to mention something about the audio. Maybe I'm just being anal about it, but the audio on these podcasts that I've been doing so far, they're not up to my standards yet. We're still tweaking with the equipment. I've got some new equipment, thanks to my friends at MTV, who've been very generous, and it's continually improving. We're going to get it to the state it should be, so that you're not thinking about things like, why is it echoey? Why is Josh softer than the guest? But this one, I think, sounds a little bit better, and we're on our way to making it a little bit up to the lofty standards of my favorite podcasts. So anyway, as always, guys, hit me up on Twitter, Joshua Horowitz. Tell me who you want to hear from. Tell me what you think of the show so far. Please subscribe on iTunes if you're digging it, and leave a comment, rate it, spread the word, and finally, God, I'm just like plug after plug, request after request. Check out all our stuff on MTV.com. There's a ton of great content there that we're producing every single day. My interviews, some great writers there with analysis and funny riffs on the biggest stuff in pop culture. So, well worth your time. I hope you guys enjoy this. If you're a Lee Pace fan, you're going to have a blast, because like I say, he really doesn't do this kind of long-form interview ever, so this is a special treat. Enjoy this episode of Happy, Sad, Confused with Lee Pace.
You made it into a film,
didn't you? I did. It's something. Thank you.
Really cool. Where do you fit on it?
I went into a lowbrow brilliant. Which I think is.
I think that's the best place to be.
Yeah, what do you guys
absolutely.
Think?
Absolutely.
If I had a choice for myself, I would choose lowbrow.
Yeah.
We can literally dive in if you want, just like right
now.
Let's do it. It's happening as we speak, Lee. Thank you for stopping by today. I really appreciate it, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I got a chance to watch Halt and Catch Fire.
What do you think?
I liked it. I really liked it. It's got, you know, it comes with a good pedigree.
Mm-hmm.
AMC's been doing reasonably well, you could say.
Yeah, I'd say so.
On the drama side.
I watch AMC.
No, it's interesting because, like, you're somebody that I feel like, you know, arguably the television work is maybe what you've been most known for, maybe where you've found the most interesting, rewarding material. Is it something where you found, like,
you like the lifestyle of television? You gravitate towards that format, towards building a character over many episodes, or?
I like to work. You know, I like to play interesting characters. So there's been some good opportunities that have come my way on television, but some great things, you know, with movies and theater too. So
yeah.
It's hard to you pick a favorite.
Yeah,
there's no favorite children.
Right, right. What's the initial appeal of something like *Halt and Catch Fire*? How did it come your way?
Oh, the character is fascinating.
Yeah,
it's a fascinating person in this world, and the subject matter is fascinating, and there are too many interesting things about this one not to jump on board if they would have me.
So as we speak, I know the first episode's going to debut in a couple days. I assume you guys have shot all 10.
Yeah, we've shot the whole season, and it's interesting looking at I saw the pilot again recently, and I almost don't recognize that character.
Just the evolution over those first 10?
Yeah. I mean, the impact of making this computer is transforming.
Yeah.
You know, on his character, and the things that he is willing to do to make the computer happen. I mean, challenging to his morals, to, you know, other people. It just comes a long, long way.
So yeah, let's set up the premise a little bit for people that don't know. The setting is that's the thing that'll first draw people in. I think it's a provocative, interesting time, especially given where we're at in technology nowadays and how pervasive social media is, et cetera, and how we take for granted the devices that you know, this generation is just born with. But like I grew up in the time period this film is set in, we're roughly the same age, I think, and those early 80s, it was a pivotal time for this industry. It was crazy.
Absolutely a turning point, and I found working on it how little I knew about it.
Yeah,
and I think why it was a dark time for me and will be kind of a, you know, a gap for a lot of people is that it just got more interesting. After that, after this one turning point where computers became personal, people actually invited this technology into their homes, everything just got much more fascinating from that point on. But at this point, it's a real gamble as to whether people will be into it at all. You know, who knows if people will even want these computers.
Right.
We know now, looking back, that, in fact, people did want them. And thousands of people developing, millions of people developing these computers, just refine them into such sophisticated devices. But here's a moment where, you know, it's not, you know, what are people going to like? It's if they're going to like it.
Right.
You know, will we be able to make something that people actually put into their homes? Because at that point, generally, it was video games.
Right.
Which is, I'm sure, one of your first experiences with computers, too.
I would venture to say that I spent a fair amount of time playing absurd... which now, when you look back at the games that we were obsessed with as kids, just the technology of it is just... It's a Frogger, et cetera, a Centipede. It's like...
Pong.
You can play that on the most rudimentary phone now and still get looks from other people in the subway of like, why are you playing that? There's a lot of better shit out there.
Yeah, it's true. But we grew up playing that.
Yeah.
And then we, you know, grew up with the other kind of things technology had to offer us. So it's such an integrated part of our own software.
Yeah. Do you find... So what, were you always somebody growing up that was interested in technology and into computers and stuff?
I wouldn't say primarily interested in it, but yeah. But I, you know, it's always interesting when people make something cool.
Yeah.
You know? This show has definitely shined a light in that direction.
It's very
cool.
It's obviously a fictional story, though, inspired by the quote-unquote PC wars of that time. Is it something that has been helpful to, like, dig into the actual past of what was going on at the time, or is it stuff where you're relying mostly on the scripts you're getting?
Yeah, it's helpful and very interesting. You know, it's such an interesting time, and... you know, the writers, Chris Cantwell and Chris Rogers, John Lithgow, the entire writers room, they've got such an interesting point of view on what this time was about. And so, you know, it's such a collaborative process making a television show like this. So, I find that time interesting. I find so many things about that moment in time interesting. I mean, Joe comes from... Joe McMillan is the character I play on the show, and he comes from big corporate business.
Right.
But he comes onto to Dallas, Texas to start this project, this new endeavor to make a computer that no one is, a computer that no one has the balls to build. He wants to make the most awesome computer he can make. But he comes at it with this corporate mentality. He also says he's done doing business like that. So it's like he's still finding himself and trying to figure out how he is going to make this computer happen. And he's going to, you know, do anything to do it.
I'm curious because, like, you've obviously, as I alluded to in the beginning, like, you've done a couple of very notable series that have gotten you a lot of acclaim. And this one is obviously for cable. It's AMC. Mm-hmm. And we're in a different environment now where, like, you know, everyone's acknowledging that we're literally living in a golden age for television where creators are being granted more and more control and you're able to just go in areas that you weren't able to five or 10 years ago. Are you noticing kind of a difference in terms of, like, latitude and creativity in what you're able to do here where, you know, Brian Fuller, for instance, someone you worked with in two other shows, a visionary, but maybe was, I don't know if he was hemmed in by the constraints of network television at the time.
Oh, I don't know what all, you know, Brian is a true creator and he makes such, you know, when I think about when I was doing this kind of round of press for Pushing Daisies, trying to describe what that show was about, you know, I could touch dead people back to life, but if they lived for longer than a minute, then someone else would die, and if I touched them a second time, they would die. I think about it now, and I think, gosh, I mean, who else but Brian Fuller could come up with something like this and make it so appealing, you know? And, I mean, that was such a great experience, Pushing Daisies, and I felt very creative. I absolutely fell in love with Anna Friel, and Ned, you know, was an important part of my life for a long time. So, it's interesting to kind of jump into that journey again,
yeah.
Because you know, it's not like a movie where you know what's going to happen from beginning to end,
right?
I kind of just know the beginning of Joe McMillan's story, and we don't. And I think one of the interesting things about the show is you don't know if it's going to succeed. You just don't know if this computer is going to succeed. When I watched the pilot for the first time, I saw this, you know, kind of innocence about him. You know, yeah. I mean, he's tough. He's durable, but there's no promise. It's unlikely that he'll succeed. He'll succeed at making this computer. Yeah, that it'll actually get to market.
Are you a big consumer of television as well? Do you watch a lot?
I watch a few things.
Yeah. What do you watch?
Watch Mad Men. I'm sad about Breaking Bad. I loved House of Cards.
Amazing, right?
Amazing.
Are you a binger? Do you go through it like in bunches, or did you, for instance, House of Cards, like both seasons? I basically got through in like 2 or 3 days each time.
Yeah, well, I watched the first season, and then when the second season came around, I watched the first season again.
Yeah,
into the second season. The whole world is so good, and it's interesting to kind of feel like you're actually watching our government.
Yeah.
Work.
Well, and frankly, I mean, you know, there aren't many comparisons to draw between your show and that one, but what I would say is, like, what works often in television in any medium, frankly, is the specificity of the world. And whether you know that much about it going in, the fact that you can, like, just, like, dig into an environment that you had some kind of surface knowledge of before. And the fact that, I mean, I love, like, the production design, frankly, of the show, even of just seeing, like, the Return of the Jedi poster, et cetera. And just, like, and you feel like it takes me back. And even seeing people operating the computers of that time, it really is it transports you back to that time. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's not that distant in the past. It's
but it's scary. But 30 years, that's a while now. I mean, it's scary to I don't know, for me, that seems like. It doesn't.
You're grown up. I mean, that's what happens.
I know. I know. I'm having a breakdown in front of you, Lee. I'm sorry. speaking of, are you someone that's able to kind of leave projects behind with kind of like, you know, once it's done, it's done? I mean, you know as well as I do, like, for instance, Pushing Daisies has this, like, life that lives on and people keep talking about Kickstarters, et cetera.
Oh, yeah, no, that's so great about Pushing, because I wish, I don't know. Maybe it had lasted longer if all those people who are watching it now watched it then.
Where were you?
But I'm really grateful that they found it. Like I said, I'm so proud of that show. And we felt like we were making something special when we did it. Starting a new one, you think, God, I hope people watch it. Who knows if they will.
Does it give you perspective, having been through experiences where, you know, for whatever reason, timing, whatever, they don't work. It doesn't click at the right way.
Yeah, I mean, it makes, yeah, absolutely. But that's one of the things the characters in the show are really facing, too. It's just the beginning of a new endeavor.
Yeah.
Who knows how it'll turn out?
Yeah.
You know you'll work hard, you'll do your best work, you'll try to get along with everyone, and you'll hope that, you know, the gods of success will favor you.
Right.
You know?
Did you know much of the cast in this? I love, like, Scoot McNary.
I didn't know anyone. I knew Scoot's work.
Yeah.
Been a fan of Scoot's for a long time, and he's so fantastic on this show. He's doing something very, very special. And I know what happens with the character, but I'm not going to say anything about it now. But
right.
He's an actor that I admire a lot. I feel lucky to be working with him on this.
I want to talk to you a little bit about just a general and background stuff. You've come here to New York to do some press for the show. Have you ever spent much time here? You were in Normal Heart, I remember. You live in New York?
Yeah, I live here.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, two New Yorkers. Okay, good.
Yeah.
So why New York? I mean, you know, most
Well, I've been
actors...
here since I was, 18. And
I had no idea. Okay.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's home after a while. It's
nice.
Kind of place that you never. I've lived in LA, for a few months here and there, and I love LA. It's such a great place, but it's, I don't know. You just get a relationship with the city.
Yeah. Because I mean, your childhood, from what I gather, you jumped around a bit. You were at a bunch of different places. Like, where did you spend? What do you consider when people say I'm going back home for the holidays? What would you consider that even?
Oh, Texas.
Yeah.
Texas. Yeah, I went to high school in Houston, Texas, but my folks are outside Austin now, so I go back there for holidays. But I guess it's where you learn to drive.
Right.
I think that's where people who move around a lot consider home.
I never learned to drive, Lee.
Why not? Are you from the city always?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Can imagine.
Are you judging me right now? I feel like you're judging me a little bit.
I wish you would learn to drive.
Really? Are you offering to teach me to learn to drive?
It's not that hard.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay.
Are you a good driver?
Huh?
Are you a good driver?
Do you feel comfortable
behind the wheel?
Absolutely.
Did you feel comfortable from the get-go behind the wheel? Was that the hubris of a teenager, like, I can do this, or was it just...
Well, I got this 85 Jetta, and it was a standard.
Yeah.
It looked great. It was totally a car that I loved, but that means I had to learn how to drive the standard, it's not many people do it anymore.
Right.
So I'm just testing my father's patience to drive the parking lot of Randall's.
So you must miss driving here in the city. You don't get a chance here.
I drive, yeah. I drive all the time.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Where do you park in the city?
There's plenty of places.
Wow. I always use that as my excuse for never learning, but now you're making me feel even more guilty.
Yeah, there's plenty of places to park.
Oh, God.
You gotta learn how to drive. What if you want to get out?
My wife is a very good driver.
Wow.
She likes to...
See,
she likes to drive.
She's got this figured out.
I've got the whole plan in place. It's all working, Lee. Give me a sense. So you moved here, you said, at 18. Was that for a specific job, or was it just
I went to a school.
Oh, Juilliard. You were at Juilliard. Of course you were. Yeah. So what was that environment like? Was that intense from the get-go? Was it nurturing?
Oh, yeah, it's so intense. Really, really. It's drama school. It's serious drama school. It's very intense.
Were you serious? Were you, like, a serious guy?
Yeah. I was just reading Shakespeare and Chekhov all the time, debating it with my friends. I mean, that's what I was doing at 19 in New York City. And I think about what other people my age were doing in the city, and I feel like such a dork. I'm like, God, you could have been having real fun.
You're spending hours just debating What was a typical debate?
Figuring out iambic pentameter, what the stress was, what the intention was on this line. I think he means...
Guys, come on. It's obvious. It's
obvious. And then the authorship question, that was hours and hours of...
Amazing.
Fun.
Well, is it a competitive atmosphere as well? Because everybody there is obviously supremely talented, and there are only so many jobs once you get out. Or is it a...
No, everyone's so different. I mean, the class is so small. We started with 20 people. In my class, and kind of ended up with a few less than that, but that's who I learned the most from, was my classmates, watching them grow, watching them take a note. It's 4 years of just figuring out different tools to make characters. There's nothing to complain about. It's pretty
awesome. It's a nice luxury.
It's total luxury, to really you know, think about how to use your voice, think about how to use your body, think about how to use your imagination to make a character.
Totally. Yeah. Who was in your class? Have they gone on to theater, film, a little bit of everything?
You know, Anthony Mackie was in my class.
Yeah. Anthony Mackie is a wild man. Let's talk about Anthony Mackie for a second.
He's awesome. I'm so happy for all the success he's having because he's such an incredibly talented guy and has been since school. I mean, he's just, you know.
He's the best. Yeah, we've had a chance to talk a lot over the years, and he's somebody that walks in the room and just owns the space. Was he like that back then? Was he somebody that?
Yeah, 100%.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe too much so.
No, I mean everyone loves Anthony. Everyone loves Anthony.
Yeah.
He's such a good time, you know, and he's smart and he gives of himself and
right.
You know, he's so I feel very fortunate to have been in acting class with him.
Fascinating.
We were the same age in the class too.
And you both made it into the Marvel universe.
Yes, we did. God, he's really awesome, man.
Yeah. No, he's awesome. Well, speaking of which, we're all really psyched to see you in Guardians, which looks amazing. James Gunn, a madman in the best possible way.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about, because you went up for Star Wars. I mean, you talked to us and others about that. That was public knowledge. Was it a quick shift? Was it like once they went in a different direction, let's try you out for this? What was the evolution of getting you?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. I mean, I don't know what their thinking was, but I'm, you know, glad it worked out the way it did because I've had a blast playing this character. I auditioned for Star-Lord, and then, you know, the call came through. Would you be interested in reading for the villain as well? So I did, and yeah, it was... God, the character is insane. I'm really curious to know what the fans in particular are going to make of Ronan the Accuser.
Yeah.
Is
it a big character? Like, mean, not even in terms of the size of part, but in terms of like how you're playing it. Like, what's the? Do you have to like kind of contrast the big personalities in the superhero group to kind of keep up with them? I mean, what's the?
You know, I like a bombastic villain. I like a big characterization
nice.
On a villain, and I think James is into that too. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know what to expect out of watching this movie.
Yeah.
I know what I did. when we were filming it, I know I had a good time with it, but I have no idea. I don't know what this movie's going to be.
Yeah. Who do you get to spend most of your time with? Is Karen?
Karen, yeah.
She's great, too.
She's awesome.
Yeah.
She's awesome. Yeah, we play, you know, source of all evil in the universe. I mean, we're just bad, bad, bad aliens.
That's a good notch on the list, man. That's a cool one. That's going to be exciting.
It really is cool. I mean, the character. I mean, I had a real blast with him. He's just so bad.
Yeah.
Really.
Had you ever played it? Because yeah, I'm thinking in your filmography, I can't think of something remotely similar you've ever.
No, it's unique. Yeah, he's really, really nasty.
Has it surprised you, excited you in the last few years? Because you've gotten into a bunch of these like crazy tent pole, ginormous, like obviously Hobbit as well, to be a part of these things that that really touch like
so many people,
millions,
like
literally
different cultures, yeah. Different languages, and that's something about the Hobbit being a part of Middle Earth that I find so interesting is that you know the stories resonate in so many cultures all over the world,
yeah.
You know, and that's fascinating to me, and I find it really, really interesting.
Is it when you go into a job like that and knowing like Peter? I mean, I can only imagine the task before someone like Peter Jackson, who has so many. I mean, he working with the actors is the bare minimum for a director. But like then creating a world and that no one knows it better than him in terms of how do you actually utilize visual effects in the best possible way.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're on your own in a situation like that where like he's got his side of the street to take care of, I'll just do my thing and I...
Oh, no, I want to know everything that's on his mind.
Yeah.
I want to know, what do you need me to do? How can I help, basically, you know, my attitude on something like that. What do you need this character to be? What interests you about this character? What's exciting to you about this character? That's what I want to know.
Yeah.
Because he's got such an incredible imagination and understanding of, you know, what works in this world and what's interesting about these elves and hobbits and dwarves. And, I mean, just to hear, like, you know, we shoot a lot of it on green screen, so I'm like, you know, so what is it? What's it going to be?
Yeah.
And he describes it to me, and it's so much bigger than I ever could have imagined it in my little brain.
Right.
So to be in the hands of someone like that, you know, you you know, you feel, you know, like was supported to go for it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To really do something with it. And, you know, be a little bit nuts with the character.
Well, exactly.
And the character is a little bit nuts, but that's part of the fun. You know, that's the fun.
Yeah. Well, that's the beauty, I would imagine, of working with somebody that's gotten to that level, is, like, you can take more risks on your end because you know he's going to take care of you. And yeah. he knows how to take care of his side of the street.
And if he's up for risks, I'm up for risks.
Right.
You know what I mean? I want to play some. You know, I want to play, do something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Not just show up and say the lines, but do something with the character.
And speaking of filmmakers of that stature, Spielberg.
Oh, yeah.
Is that, I mean, your smile comes to your face, and I can imagine why. That's got to be...
I mean...
Everything like,
about
what
it, he asked to do the movie is it, you know, to read what he's asking you to do. I was thinking, oh, my God, I can't believe I have the opportunity to speak lines on that set.
Yeah.
You know, Tommy Lee Jones was in that scene. He did those scenes with me. And, I mean, it was just awesome. And I remember the whole time we were shooting all that stuff in the Congress, I kept thinking, remember this. This is unique. This is special. And,
yeah.
And to, you know, work well with someone like Steven Spielberg, because I just, you know, he's so clear. He's so clear about what he wants. And I was just so kind of eager to be like, what do you need? Tell me.
Right.
What do you need right now?
Do you have devices or shortcuts in terms of, like, how you make yourself comfortable in a situation like that, where, or is it just through the repetition of knowing the material, where, like, if
you... Yeah, knowing your lines is really...
That's an important one. That's the advice number one.
Feeling comfortable when on set in the movie. Yeah.
You don't want to forget your lines in front of Tommy Lee Jones and Steven Spielberg.
No. But and also kind of a sense of what you want to do with the character. But I always feel... I felt like with that is, you know... I mean, Joe McMillan's something different because... you know, with that, I mean, I felt like I know the situation. I know I have ideas about the character, but I really kind of want to understand what his ideas are about the character. With Joe, the character is so complicated. He's just so complicated.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, picking everyone's mind about, you know, how they interpret him, and then, you know, 50% of it is really just kind of figuring out the connections to myself,
right?
The character.
Well, what I'm curious, like, what your negotiation has been in terms of, like, with fame. Like, are you happy with sort of, like, the level of, like, where you can walk the street? I would think with, you know, people recognize you, but you're not hopefully assaulted at every turn. I mean, does it feel like?
I never feel assaulted. I don't really feel like there is much of a relationship with fame.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, someone will come up and say they like the movie they've seen me in.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really... I mean, that's kind of nice to hear. You know?
Yeah.
It's nice to hear that. Oh,
validation is a nice thing.
Yeah. And, like, you know, you're making... You know, you're doing something that makes people happy. That's nice. You know?
Right.
And, you know, the movie called The Fall that I did that...
Yeah.
You know, it's the... I think the thing that most people most commonly come up and be like, hey, I saw it. And I'm always amazed that someone has seen it.
Yeah.
It's such a small movie, but... It means so much to me when someone comes up and says, like, I saw it, I love this, have to have questions about it. You know, it's cool, you know.
Do you enjoy this kind of process? Because, frankly, when I was reading up on you, being a fan, I was like, I couldn't find, frankly, a lot of long-form conversations that you've done. Do you enjoy kind of, like, talking about the material, or is it something that is just goes with the job and you've tried to...
I don't know. I'm cautious about blabbing too much about it.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to... You know, it's like you don't want to see the pipes of a building. Why
sure.
would you want to see what's on in the actor's mind when he makes the character? You just want to see what the character is, right?
Yeah.
Like that's one thing I've been cautious about with this is, you know, don't talk about the season too much. Just kind of talk about Joe in a way that doesn't, well, you know, whoever's interested in finding out about what the show's about.
Yeah.
I want to put ideas in there because I want the character to... really speak for itself, you know.
Well, what's cool even in that first episode, frankly, is to see, like, there were two or three moments where I was like, I can't believe this character is doing this in this situation. Like, that's got to be exciting for you, reading that first script. Be like, okay, all bets are off again. This could go anywhere.
Yeah. And I'm glad that's... I mean, the things that Joe does through the season are, you know, it's he does some pretty... wild things.
Yeah.
It's rotten things. You know, he's in it to win it. So that's fun to kind of, because I believe in Joe.
Yeah.
You know, he can be a bastard. but I believe in him. And I think that his mission is to make an awesome computer. That's all it is. He wants to make an awesome computer that's small, it's fast, it's cheap. And if he accomplishes that, then, you know, maybe a lot of people will buy them.
Right.
And then what happens? I mean, one of my favorite lines in the pilot is, it's the computer's not the thing, it's the thing that gets us to the thing.
Yeah.
It's just kind of a reminder to Gordon that it doesn't matter. The computer doesn't matter, actually, because, you know, the way it impacts people's lives will be so profound, you know. And, it, you know, here we have 30 years later, we can look back and see that, yes, he was right.
Actually. Yeah.
But in the moment, he doesn't know if he's right.
Right.
He just knows he's all in.
You haven't been lured yet into social media, though, despite your association with technology in this role.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
it's good enough for James Gunn and Karen Gillan and all your buddies at Guardians.
I know they were encouraging me to get on board, and I guess I just didn't know what I would say about it. I didn't know what to say. I would be curious to go on and listen to it. You know, people are talking about.
You should lurk for a little bit.
Yeah, lurk.
that's the seedy way of describing it.
Yeah, lurk, just kind of spy on people.
I guess that's another way of looking at it.
Yeah, I'm curious about it. I mean, I'm just curious about the impact of it more than anything.
Yeah.
I think the impact of it is incredible, you know, and, you know, those television shows that people connect to and such a big way, live tweet through it, you know.
That is a fascinating new aspect of it, to, like, live, it's a second life for a show, and to, I mean, I frankly felt, I just marathoned over the weekend True Detective, and I felt late to the party, because I was on social media, and I was seeing all my friends and colleagues just sort of, like, just have that conversation at once.
Yeah.
And you literally have to disengage for that weekend if you don't want it all ruined for you. It's a weird phenomenon.
It's a weird phenomenon, and it's, like, the technological innovation of social media is so fascinating. It's like no longer is it like a newspaper, one person speaking to many people,
right,
or a telephone where it's one person speaking to one person. It's millions of people speaking to millions of people all at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's fascinating to me.
And what Twitter becomes then is, it's like you're creating your own personal filter, which is both exciting and dangerous. Like, you know, you don't want it to be an echo chamber where you're only hearing from the people that you know and trust. You want to hear different viewpoints.
Yeah, but I guess that's an opportunity for you to take if you want it. But if you want to just hear your own viewpoints and those of people who feel the same as you, that's there too.
There you go.
It's that's what's so incredible about it, is that it's not, it's just a tool, really. And then people do what they want with it. You know, that's
exactly the line you were just saying from the pilot. Yeah, it's not the thing. It's the thing to get to the thing.
Yeah.
So you've finished season one. Presumably, hopefully, audience response. You're excited to continue this character.
Well, hopefully. I love the character. I think I've learned so much about myself playing him. I think the character is just fascinating. And I think that, you know, where this story has to go just gets more and more interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to.
What's the next acting gig? Do you have stuff in the, like, obviously Guardians is coming out later this summer. Other stuff coming up?
I don't know what it's going to be yet. I'm kind of, it's been a busy year.
Yeah.
So I've kind of gone and shooting this show. I shot Guardians of the Galaxy. I did our additional photography for The Hobbit.
Right.
So I did another movie with Stephen Frears about Lance Armstrong. I've just been. I need to spend some time not in costumes and makeup and just be myself for a
while. Walking the streets of New York or driving in New York.
Driving around.
You're the one person besides the taxi drivers driving around New York.
Yes.
In our remaining moments, I have this weird, sketchy fedora filled with random questions.
I
Lee,
noticed that. Yeah.
You did. You played it cool.
Yeah.
You're like, this is going to come in at some point. So, they're the epitome of randomness. You want to pick one or two and see how you fare?
Oh, boy.
I can see the sweat coming now.
All right.
What do we got?
Where haven't you been that you want to go? That's
okay.
A great question.
Not bad.
I've always wanted to go to Vietnam, actually.
Interesting.
I've traveled quite a bit, but Vietnam has always been a place that I haven't made it to yet. My father fought in Vietnam, and I wanted to take him to go see some of the places that he went to.
Wow, yeah.
And just hear about that experience that he had.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I've heard stories, but, you know, it just sounds like something it's definitely top of my list.
You did, from what I gather, you had an interesting childhood in that you were in the Middle East for a period of time, too, thanks to your dad's work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's got to be something that, you know, I always say, like, even just growing up in New York, you're exposed to so much in the way of different cultures. But, traveling the world at a young age, it's got to really inform your viewpoint on the world.
I'm really appreciative of that, that they... You know, that they made that choice. My mom had never left Oklahoma before she moved to the Middle East. And, I guess she'd spent some time in, you know, around Shreveport and Louisiana and stuff, but it was such a huge leap for her to, you know, go to Saudi Arabia.
I can only imagine.
And raise these two kids. And, you know, it's just, asked them for a whole bunch of pictures from the early 80s and us growing up.
Yeah.
And I've got all these just incredible pictures of them in these compounds in Saudi Arabia and Bahrain just suburban places. But, I mean, it's... my memories were my sister, our cat, my mom, my friends.
Yeah, like what years were you?
I didn't know it was Saudi Arabia. We moved there when I was 2.
Oh, wow. And how long were you there?
Until the second grade. And then we moved to New Orleans, and then to Houston, and then back to Lafayette, Louisiana, and then back to Houston.
That's a fascinating little dream. Yeah, totally. Let's finish
one
more.
Okay. Describe my perfect movie-going experience.
Okay, I want to hear what's the beverage, the food, the environment, what kind of movie are you seeing? Are you seeing it alone with friends?
I love going to see a movie alone, but I wouldn't say that was a perfect experience.
Right.
Perfect experience is when you're, you know, with friends and like at Sunshine or Angelica or IFC in like a really crowded movie house.
Yeah.
With like a movie you're super, super excited to see.
Yeah.
You know, and get there early because all the seats get filled up in New York. And, you know, kind of watch people who's seeing this movie, who's into this movie, what's our demo here? and then basically spend the next 2 hours trashing the movie.
A little healthy debate is always good.
Yeah. That's one thing I think is unique about New Yorkers is that they want to pull it apart.
Yeah.
They want to discuss, you know, they want to argue about it. I mean, English friends of mine, it's like after they're like, they love this, they like that.
Like, oh, come on, let's just get into the negatives first.
What did you hate?
What didn't work for you? One caveat I'll give the Angelica, that subway, you hear a lot of the train traffic during the movie. That could take you out of it.
Do you like that or not like that?
I mean, I like it in that I feel I'm home. Like, it's like it's comforting.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I guess it depends on the movie. It depends on the moment it comes in the movie.
But yeah, I mean, I have a lot of fond recollections of I grew up on the Upper West Side of like going to like the small theater near Lincoln Center and just seeing like every Woody Allen movie every couple of years. It's just every year.
Yeah, the Walter Reed. That's because my dorms were right above that.
There you go.
So I remember thinking, God, how cool to do movies like that.
Yeah.
What did you think of Grand Budapest Hotel?
Loved it.
It's such a great movie.
Loved
it.
Yeah, it's so fun, and I mean, all his stuff is great. I mean, I'm a total Wes. Groupie, but and Rafe, just hysterical.
I mean, hysterical. It's been my favorite movie so far this year. I find it just so imaginative, and, you know.
Yeah.
And Rafe is absolutely masterful.
Do you have the short list? Is it like the, you know, the Wes, the P.T. Anderson, the kind of the Fincher, like that kind of usual kind of small group, or is there a specific list of people?
Yeah, well, I always see anything that Wes Anderson does, because I think he's got such a cool point of view.
Yeah.
There's a lot of course favorites. So.
Yeah. Woody, were you a Woody fan?
Yeah, I'll see every movie that Woody Allen makes.
Totally. How about one more for the road?
Oh, yeah, okay.
Let's do it.
All right.
This is going to be the weirdest one yet, I can tell.
Okay, that's so cool. I wish I were better at...
Some self-reflection here, oh, Lee. What's the one fatal flaw?
Boy, I don't know. God, there's a whole list.
I was going to say,
really get into this. If you really, this is one.
One skill you're.
No, I wish I was better at learning languages. I feel like it's a big. I've blown it to get to 35, and I don't properly speak another language. I think it's a. Maybe I've missed it now.
That's the scary part, right? It feels like our ability to sponge it all up has dissipated.
It's just gone.
What we got is what we got now.
I mean, I know, maybe if I'm looking for a project, but I just can't even imagine the kind of...
Yeah. Well, maybe you can do some immersive...
To learn German, so I really would like to.
Some immersive Vietnamese, and then take Dad, and then it's a whole thing.
Yeah.
There you go. There's your plan for the next 6 months. I'll learn to drive, you learn Vietnamese, and we'll come together and talk about it.
Be better people.
Lee, it's really great to meet you finally, and thank you for stopping by. Congrats on the show. It's good stuff, man.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. It was great talking to you.
Thanks, buddy.